obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
When Marge mentioned what she was going to do, knowing that I was from the Deep South, she had already prepared. And she said, "You'll just have to talk fast. I'm going to take part of your time." I spent probably 10 or 15 minutes with her, and she said, "Being from the South, I thought you talked fast, but maybe you don't need to talk quite as fast as that, because I don't know when to stop." And most of you, a lot of you out here, doesn't know what taking shorthand was. I never did do shorthand. I just talk it. So you can figure out later. I could introduce myself in many ways because I've been given a lot of names and titles. Some of them I deserved and some of them I didn't. I was given the name of Mouth of the South. You probably have figured that one out by now. I deserve it. God Witch. I am the middle child. And that's a unique spot to be. But I am most humble when I tell you, my name is Juanita Allen, and I am a very grateful recovering Al-Anon.
Hi, Juanita. I'm gonna,
thank you. It's wonderful to be here. When I realize where, when I find myself here, and think of the depths of despair that I found myself in with the disease of alcoholism. And then I find myself here when I was invited to do this. I thought, there's just no way that you can get from down there to out here. There's just no way. What a wonderful, wonderful opportunity I've had. I have been in the fellowship actively working the Al-Anon program for 34 years. I personally feel like that's all I can count. I came to get a man sober. I was married to the most wonderful man in the world. And when I saw him changing, I would have done anything in the world to have kept that man the way he was. I thought it was my responsibility. I darn near killed a whole family doing that. I like to qualify. I am the widow of an alcoholic, the mother, the grandmother, the sister, the aunt. And I started sharing that once because I like you to know where I came from. And I was at a workshop and was part of the program, and I did that, and I sat back down, and I just know that was an alcoholic that said that to me. He was sitting in front of me, and he turned around and he said, "You just must be a carrier." I have a message for the alcoholics in the audience. I always like to do that real quick because I know once I got up here, they say, "Uh-oh, there's another sweet little old lady going to tell us how to stay sober and how to do it." Well, I want you to know that most of the time, I'm not even a sweet little old lady. And I want to send as many of you home grateful as I can because you haven't lived until you drank under my watchful eye. Or tried to get sober with my strategy. It is wonderful to be here. The committee has just outdone themselves. And I think it's at this time it's appropriate to say, let's give them another hand. I like to tell in a general way, and for somebody with a mouth of God, it's not easy to keep it general, but what happened to me, what happened to this family, what I became, and what it's like now, which is the greatest part of all. I would say I've had a lot of learning experience, as most of you probably have too in the years out there. But this year has been it. I was having some illness in the family last year, and I had a little talk with God, and I said, whatever it is, I knew I was going to need all the strength I could get. And I said, whatever it is that you want me to do, just let me know. Well, I had to have another talk with God recently, and I said, now, no, a minute, but I've had the privilege of being invited to quite a few places this year, and I needed every one of them. And it has brought me to this podium today with more gratitude than I've ever known. One of the things that I feared was I usually take an entourage with me, and because I've got a big car, and I'm always willing, and I'm always like to go. And I thought, wait a minute, I'm going a long ways from them. This one came with me. Judy came with me, not with me, but she followed. Robin, and I want you to know, Robin lives in Coronado now. It's so wonderful to see you. We all belong to Solutions Group in Panama City, Florida. And then all my new friends. I never would get up before a crowd and speak in high school. I know some teachers are doing flips up there when I catch myself right here. And I have a husband up there that I know is just suffering because he didn't ever know what was coming out of his mouth, and usually concerned him. So I know he still has a little bit of trouble with me being at a mic. What is she going to say today? But when I see the mix, anybody loved me enough that they would take this trip with me and be here today is just anything that I never imagined. The speakers have been wonderful. The crutches, always have something just right in front of me for the gratitude. I was raised on crutches, just about, and which is such an important part of my story. And such gratitude that these 2 feet get me anywhere that I need to go and have for a long time. And by the way, speaking of a long time, I celebrated my 45th anniversary of my 39th birthday this year. I'm going to let you wonder about that one until the end of the meeting. The crutches, what has come full circle with me this year, some reasons of some things that happened to me in my life. I had an injury as a child, and it took me to a lot of hospitals. Well, not a lot of hospitals, a lot of surgeries. They didn't have those kind of, back in the Depression, and they didn't have hospitals in all the towns. And there was a need. I needed some surgery. We had county health nurses that always spotted a particular need and informed the families. And there was a crippled children's hospital in Mobile, Alabama, and they talked to my parents about going, and I've been so grateful for that, for having had that opportunity. But I'd never been out of my county at that time. I went to those hospitals alone. Hospitals are so important. If God ever wants to get my attention, he uses a hospital. It got me to Al-Anon. I went to those hospitals, went into surgery alone, and I told you I'm the middle child. You get up in the morning fighting where you need to or not, because either the oldest group or the youngest is going to get at you. So you just get it out of the way, you know, fight all day long. And that was really a blessing to me because it prepared me for what was ahead. I can remember one of those surgeries. I wasn't even a teenager then. And my toe started turning, well, my foot was hurting so bad, and I kept telling them something was wrong, and they, just a kid, you know, they didn't listen. And when my toe started turning blue, they said, well, something's wrong. And I said, well, I tried to tell you that. The cast was on too tight. So they cut it, and everything was okay. And that happened to me for 3 or 4 summers without a member of my family being there. It didn't get me in trouble. I just always said, right then, when I have my family, this is the way it's going to be. That caused me some trouble, too. I had to revamp that one. So I did the surgeries and the crutches, and I've had some since then, and just move on. It doesn't make any difference. It's gotten me where I need to go. And I was not that close to my mother. But in that family, I don't remember ever hearing the word, I love you. I don't meet many people today that I don't tell them I love them and I mean it. But I thought, you know, that's okay. I'll do this, and, you know, when I come. Well, I grew up, and there was a young man that was my brother's best friend. Hadn't seen him since we grew up because there was 5 years difference in our ages. I used that against him. I always told everybody I married an older man, and it bugged him, and that's why I enjoyed doing it. But life was uneventful. I was just doing my thing, and I got a letter from him one day. And he was in the Panama Canal Zone, and I took my time writing, and I answered it. And eventually, pretty soon, I got a picture. I had not known what he looked like as an adult. And there was the best-looking soldier man you've ever seen. He was in the Army then. There was no Air Force or those branches of service. And he contacted me one day because war had been declared, and they were going to send him back with a lot of others to retrain to go back overseas. And he called and told me he was coming. And I was working in Montgomery, Alabama. And he drove up in a cab in that uniform, tall, good looking. He was hooked right then and didn't know it. We had the longest courtship around. 6 weeks later, he called me from Spokane, Washington, after he was home on leave and went back. He called and asked me to marry him. Well, I took off to Spokane, Washington, without telling my parents. And I didn't even give that a thought until my granddaughter, that's now 28, but when she was 20, just finishing college, her mother let her go to Colorado to work for the summer. Well, I was furious. How could you? She's only 20. That's exactly the age I was when I went off and married my husband. And so with that one, I just shut up on that one and didn't blame them anymore for that. I would like to tell you word for word what happened to me, but all of you that's been up here and is in the program, I can just only tell you how I saw it. And to quote Chuck Yeager that I heard him interviewed one day, this is the way I saw it. It might not necessarily be the way it happened, but it's the way I saw it. But you know, when I heard him say that, I thought, oh, that man's old. He's 80 years old. What does he know? When I married, my husband had planned the most beautiful wedding you've ever seen in Spokane, Washington, because he had been there long enough and met some people. And my life began that day. He was every woman's dream. He was this woman's dream. He was so good to me. And there that dream was that I'm going to have this family, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do all the things that was not done in my life that I thought. And, you know, I did set out. I think I accomplished that. I wanted to be the best wife, the best mother, the best grandmother that had ever been. And I got one of the greatest shocks. There's no demand for any of those. They just didn't appreciate it. I still think I was. But we started out on this all-American dream. I loved it. In the meantime, the war was over, but not before. Well, I better back up on that one because that's such an important part of my story. My husband did go back overseas after about a year after we were married, or less than a year. Well, I was pregnant. And my boy was born when he went back. He didn't see this boy until he was like 3 days being a year old. He didn't bond with him. I bonded for both of us. And that started a pattern in this family. He served his time, came out, he got out of the service. And when the war was over and we started this all-American life, this dream, And then Charles's daughter was born. A lot of people think that we were married to different people, but that was his girl. He bonded for her with more than he ever, and he never did the boy. That still, to this day, is not a pretty picture. Sometimes we're not as close as I would like us to be. But we started on this dream. But he decided to go back in the Air Force. I loved every day of the military. I wasn't part gypsy anyway. Liked to travel, you know. And that's no offense to anybody that is a gypsy and wants to do this. But that's why I loved that life. And so I enjoyed all of the military life. No problem with alcoholism. My story is just a little different. I had 20 of the most wonderful years in a marriage. I had 10 lived in hell, and I had 10 adjusted years. And that's what you have when you have alcoholism in the family. He decided to retire. We was living in Panama City, Florida then, at the Air Force Base. We were stationed there 3 times. I am originally from Alabama. So he retired and took a job, and things started happening that I didn't like. And he was doing a little more drinking. I had not a clue what an alcoholic was. I didn't have a clue. I had a brother that became alcoholic, and my husband had a brother. We called his brother a drunk. We got a little bit more sophisticated later on and called mine an alcoholic after we became that. But that started the problems, and I had not thought of this in years until recently, and that's what these talks do for you. You recall some things that you had forgotten. But his parents, I thought, was old. They was in their 70s. And so this boy, their son, they didn't see very often. And my mother-in-law was sick, and she was on a walker. They came to visit, and her son happened to be on a fishing boat. And when he would come in, he slept under a shed down not too far from where I live right now. And they had not seen him in years. Well, my husband was too good to, he wasn't messing with the likes of him. So he wouldn't have anything to do with him. But I loved these people. A caregiver, you know how we are. You know how we're all going to take care of everybody. But I truly loved them and felt for them, although I didn't know what he was. So they wanted to see him. And so I stayed on the phone until I located him, and he was fixing to go back out on the ship. And I told him that I got him on the phone and told him his parents were there. Well, I want to see him. Well, I knew he was drunk. So I did tell him I found him, but he's drunk. I will take you to see him if you want to go, but I want you to know that first. And they said, well, that's the only way we'll ever get to see him. So I put him in the car, walker and all this, and went and found him. And it was not a pretty picture, but he was their boy. But my husband didn't even want to hear anything about it. But we went, moved. He had that opportunity to go in business, and we moved to a little aristocratic town, Eufaula, Alabama. It started. The game started, and I didn't know what the games were. I didn't know how to play them. Somebody asked me what I would do if I had it to do over, and I said I certainly wouldn't try it without drugs. The catch was he didn't. The drinking started. He was obsessed with what was in the bottle. I was obsessed with keeping him out of the bottle. I never poured out the first drink. It cost money to replenish. Man, I'm the saver in the family, I always was, and that cost more money, although we didn't have use for it, but I didn't want to have to pour out good liquor, you know, and didn't dawn on me that he would go right back out and replenish it, but I just didn't want that to happen. So I started. He said I had a bird nose like a bird dog. I monitored every function of his being just about it. I could tell when he drove up. I'd like to tell you at that time I thought when I heard him drive up, I would say he had 10 drinks today. He had 2 drinks today. You know, I actually thought I was controlling it to that degree. And so he would... had wrecks and a whole 9 yards. And when I talk to anybody about the disease of alcoholism, I think of my husband. That was one of the finest. And I'm not saying I found out you can be alcoholic and still be one of the finest people in the world. But He was a man that nobody in this world had a wonderful military career. Nobody would have ever in this world believed that he would have become alcoholic. So the disease, I can accept it better that way than I could have any other way, knowing what it did to a man like him. When his brother died, we went to the funeral, and he looked down in the casket, and he said, "What a waste." It was not a year before his problem had started. And there's no way anybody could have ever made us believe that this would have ever happened to us. It was such a battle, such a struggle, he hit them and I found them. The empties, it didn't make any difference if they were empty, just so I found them. I had the evidence. And finally we decided, our son was already, well, I will tell you, he was out of college. He didn't take any sheepskins with him. Somebody was telling about the library in the University of Alabama. My kids all went to the University of Alabama. And they said they need to teach them. One Auburn fan said, "You need to teach them where the library is." And I said, "Well, I spent a lot of money up there." And my son never did find out where it was. He had a good time. He said they just mixed books with school, and that just killed it. He was quite a character. We did move back. My husband decided, whatever he decided, that's what we did, because I had just that much respect for him, but I was beginning to lose it. We did move back to Panama City. I thought, now, if we get back there, I'll find the man I left with. But we took us with us. There are no geographics. It got worse and worse. I had left a job when we left there, and they wanted me back when they found out I was back in town. But I wasn't ready to go back to work. So I didn't. I just stayed home and watched Charles. I was one busy woman. The only reason I didn't do all of the wrong things, I just didn't think of them. We get back, and it started. And as I say, he got in jails. I never did get him out. He didn't call me because he knew better. I would watch him. And this is my story. I did things like, if I got upset, I raked. I'll still do that. So I'm outside one day raking, and things aren't going good at home. And I had a front carport, and he had a back one. And he loved it, and I found out why later. Kept something shiny began to flip by as I raked. And I reached down, and it said Smirnoff. I gathered me up about a dozen of those caps. I love to tell it because I looked then about like I do now, dignified. You know how dignified that looked. And so I'd always wanted to get the evidence on him. I thought it was so important that I tell him, tell him what he was doing. And Judy and I were talking not too long ago about this, and I was deciding why. I knew I finally found out why I did that. I loved this man the way he was. And I thought it was my job. See, I didn't have a problem. You know about what I was like. And Karen said this morning, I think it was Bonnie, talking about stark raving sober without a drink. I did crazier things than he did. I get embarrassed today thinking about some of the things I did. And I gathered up those caps, and he was at work, and I lined them up. We had a long coffee table. It looked out into the pool. I mean, just a nice place. And I lined those caps up, just in a row right across here. So I settle down, and I hear him coming. And I could tell when he'd kicked his shoes off at the door, again, about what condition he was going to be in. And that was one of those days he wasn't in a good one. And he would walk by and me sitting there waiting, just waiting, till he found those, that stance you have. Till he saw those caps. I knew he saw them right to start with. But he wasn't about to say anything. Finally, he slurred and said, "What in the hell is this?" And I just really rallied back, and I said, "That's what I wanted you to tell me." That ended that. I didn't care. I'd gotten the goods on him, and I confronted him with it, and I don't care what answer. There was no other answer than what had happened. Another thing that I did I watched his pattern change. I don't know if you knew that about alcoholics or not, but when you get too close to what's happening, they change the, when you get the answers, they change the questions. And so he would explain why he was doing this, like going out on around the pool with orange juice and how much better it made him feel. He had flu a lot. And you know that story. And it made him feel better. It's orange juice, a little bit of vodka in it. He'd switch to vodka because it didn't have the odor that bourbon had. And so he'd go back in the house, and, you know, I'm out there around the pool and not thinking what he was doing was refilling. So you see, there's a little something wrong going on up here. And one day I was shining. He's, you know, retired military man, so those shoes had to be clean. And so he was dusting the dust off. He always did it in the house, but he's changed the pool area. I didn't think anything about it until I went to dust the dust off of my shoes one day, and there was the miniatures in the little shoe shine kit. Another day he came in, and I was being a little bit affectionate toward him that day and popped him on the seat, and it rattled. Which he explained. Of course, I all know he's a thin man, and, he, you know, bones rattle too, but not that rattled. So I wanted to investigate and see what was in the pockets. That explained why he stopped taking a shower and started taking a tub bath. And he explained how much better that made him feel to relax. And I thought, who wouldn't it relax to get in there with your miniatures, you know? He'd come straight in the door and go straight and take a tub bath and had never taken a tub bath. But it was those kind of things. I can remember a day that I wanted to travel and he didn't. I told you I liked to go. And finally, I decided I want to start taking a few trips myself. I would talk with him when I was away, and I could tell what stage he was in. Run my trip, but I'm still doing my thing. No program of any kind at that time. But I got back, and at high noon, we had an alley, and the garbage can was back there. I am going through that garbage can to see how many empties I was going to find in there. And that's the part I talk about. I get embarrassed when I think about it today. Right at the bottom of the garbage can, you know, there was the empties. Had a minister. And these kind of things are so important. They've come into place so much a reason. We were stationed in Alaska. And we're Baptist background, and we had these Presbyterian friends, and we had been stationed with them before, and they told us about their minister and how much they liked him. And we rotated back before they did, and so we went to this church strictly because we'd heard so much about Richard. There have been no accidents in my life. You can call them coincidences or whatever you want to, but God was in there working all the time. Took a long time sometime for it to come around. But I've seen so much of that this year. We met Richard in 1958. No drinking, no problem, no anything. It was not into the early 70s that it really became a problem. We left him in Panama City when we moved away, retired, moved away, came back. He was still there because God knew that we needed him, would need him, because the drinking was getting really bad by that time. I wouldn't go to see Richard because he was a minister. And he might tell God that my life was out, that Juanita's life was out of control. So I wouldn't tell him. I didn't go for a long time until it just got so bad. So I went to see him. And he had told Charles about AA. I'd never heard of Al-Anon. And so he took Charles, spotting the ego that, not many alcoholics have ego, but he did. So he lined up some names that Charles would recognize and had them sitting at the AA meeting. Richard took Charles. The reason he knew there was a problem when I went to see him finally is they was having a church meeting, and Charles went by to pick him up and was drunk, and they both missed the church meeting. So that was a pretty good clue that Charles had a problem. So when I went to see Richard, he told me about Al-Anon. And he told me that he was going to call somebody and have them meet me there, told me what night it was. Well, I'm always got to be in control. So I get in my car, and I go down the daytime, and you know, look over the situation and see if it was befitting somebody of my status. And I was afraid to go down there in the daytime. And that's where the meeting was. I always feel sorry for anybody that missed that meeting place. I waited outside, and Richard said there's only women there, you know, in Al-Anon. Well, there was no men there then. And all I saw going in that room, that broke down building, was men. Well, I wasn't about to go ask one of them about something like this. They might judge me. Not a one of them knew me. And so finally, I thought, well, I've goofed. I just messed up. So I got out of the car and got under a palm tree. The meeting was at 8 o'clock at night. Well, she still didn't come. Men would pass by me, and I know they wondered. They probably spotted that's the wife of one of us or something. And so I went home. Well, I want you to know Charles got drunk at me when I got through with him. I left a nice house to go down there. And so I called the woman the next day and apologized for misunderstanding. And she said, well, I just didn't come. She said that I just decided not to go. Well, you know, that put a bad taste in my mouth. I'm real punctual and dependable. So that just put a bad taste in my mouth right then. And first of all, you know, I didn't have a problem. So why am I having to do all of this? It's him that's got the problem. But I did want to get him sober. So I decided that I would go back. And I got there and I began to hear, and that's why I only count 34 years. You shouldn't count for the reasons that I went. The only thing came out of that is I knew where to go back to when the time came, when I was ready. I heard them talking about meetings, AA meetings. And I thought, how am I going to help him if I'm not with him? Because I decided he had gotten real flaky by that time. I wasn't paying attention to what was happening to me. So I heard about open AA meetings. And so I jumped on that one and went in that building where they met. There wasn't a chair in there that matched. It was raining. The roof leaked. They had buckets sitting around. And Charles got up to go get some coffee. And God loved the man that was sitting back of me, spotted the pain I was in, I guess. And he said, honey, it's not as bad as it looks. I thought, you could fool me. It couldn't look any worse. It couldn't be any worse. Well, anyway, I nudged Charles. I was the elbow Al-Anon. Did you hear that? So we get in the car. I didn't want to talk during the meeting to fill him in right there. So we get in the car, and I said, Charles, did you hear what they said? Now, Charles, you know you've got to have a sponsor. Well, he came up with that perfect plan. He picked out three names in town that I would recognize. One of them was in AA, and the rest of them wasn't. Told me they were his sponsors. And, you know, I settled back with all the comfort in the world. I had taken care of my responsibility. I had Charles three sponsors. I didn't know you had that. Didn't have that many. And I continued to attend meetings with him. And the situation got worse and worse and worse. The things that I said to this man was unreal. I can remember one day by that time he was threatening divorce. I wasn't. I didn't want a divorce, but I was getting ready to get out of that. And so he always wrote all this little stuff down on a piece of paper, and he told me what he would give me if we got a divorce. And he said, that is unless you marry some sorry SOB. And I looked at him and I said, I'm not in the habit of associating with sorry SOBs until now, that is. I stayed, thank God, here long enough to know he was not an SOB. He had a disease. My disease was disease of attitude. I quit. All I would do at night, I would quit persecuting him at night or attacking him when he came in. He didn't drink at home. He couldn't have because of me. I made it too miserable for him. So he drove, and he was too proud to go in a bar. So he just got a bottle and rode around. But he was a terrible driver drunk. He did have a lot of wrecks. And this went on for I don't know how long. I don't have a clue. I just know that I can count 34 years. And that's when life began for me. The kids, by that time, my boy is acting like a duck. walking like a duck, quacking like a duck.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Didn't think it would ever happen because he dealt with his daddy. I do not know what I would have done without that boy during those first years of the drinking before he became. The daughter stuck her head in the sand. But I don't blame her for that. I blame me for that. I made sure she worshiped this man, and he did her to a flaw. And I didn't want her as disappointed in him as I was, so I protected her if she saw him with too much to drink one time, and that's all during this 10 years. When she saw a raging mother, and you can't unring a bell. You literally can't unring a bell. I could talk to her until I was blue in the face, but she still knows what she heard. And to her, I was not treating Daddy right. Now we're going to go back to hospitals. I was having surgery one day, had it scheduled. Charles chose not to come home that night. And when we talk about it, we heard it this morning, don't create a crisis, don't try to avoid one. Charles didn't come home that night. And I was due in the hospital the next day. I had never been, two babies, I didn't have anybody with me. He was overseas with the first one, and the second one, he didn't get back to the hospital. So that's my pattern. But the things I've learned from that is unbelievable. So he called about 6 o'clock in the morning. He didn't call. He had somebody call me, and he'd had a wreck. Didn't know where the truck was. He was at a grocery store. Knew enough to tell him my name. And so I did. I started to change then, but I wasn't ready for what really was ahead. I took him to the Air Force base, and the doctor said, "We know what's wrong with him. Just watch him today." He had a big knot on his head, and I said, "I'm doing the hospital myself at 10 o'clock." And he said, "As a favor to you, I will admit him." So I raced home, get my clothes, go back, check in, and late that afternoon, he walked in my room. He cleans up well. He cleaned up well. And he started the attack. And I've been told by alcoholics, I've heard, I go to a lot of AA meetings, they don't like themselves. And if they can push your button enough, that gives them an excuse for that behavior or that guilt that they feel. And all I said to him was, "Get up, get out of my room." He was across the hall. I always think of that pretty sitting. I just took him right with me, you know. And so I didn't have anybody that could come with me. They took me out the next morning an hour early. Had some friends that was coming. But they took me in an hour early. But he knew, but he slept in and didn't come. When the gurney hit the operating room door, life changed. I said, "Nobody is going to run me crazy." And with that, I left him. He didn't come to the hospital but about maybe 15 minutes. That boy's the one that was there for me. And finally he moved away. The son moved away and his disease was getting bad. I went to see him one day, stopped by there, and he said, "Mom, I want to talk to you." And of course, I, you know, always got two jumps ahead of everything. And I said, "You have a drinking problem, don't you?" I came home and told his daddy. And he was furious. And I couldn't understand that. Of all people ought to understand, you should. And then I thought about it, and I thought, well, you know, he always bragged about me. My boy and I killed the most birds today. He wasn't about to go brag about my boy and I became the best alcoholics in town. So I really could understand that one. But all I would do is what I knew to do. I would call him every day, because I was back in Al-Anon at that time, for real. When I came back, I came back for me. It never was a we after that. It was for me. My husband did go to treatment. And during this period of time, I kept hearing, you know how these sponsors are. You just know how they are. Detached for love. Detached for love. And, well, there just was no way. There was no way. I wasn't sure whether I loved or hated him. And I'm quite sure that he had the same feeling. So there was no way I could do it. And I, with this many years in the program and in birth years, I still will tell anybody, you detach however you can. God will take care of the rest of it. And that's how that's the only way I could do it. And I would call my, going back to my son, I would call him every day. But unless my husband asked me how his boy was doing, I wouldn't tell him. And then my husband got sick. And he had a heart attack. And they flew him to Keesler Air Force Base because they had discovered cancer by that time. He didn't even know he had it. And when the doctor called me out, it was bad. I mean, I was told from day one it was bad. And they flew him, and I drove over to Keesler. And it was downhill all the way. For one, well, he died in a week and a half. And I'm over there, and I've got a car. And, of course, that's the normal thing for me to get in the car, go home. I've got a funeral to do. And I think about the times I had the best 6 hours of meditation and thinking on that trip home. I called my children to tell them. And then I headed for home as soon as I signed the papers to release the body. And I thought of all the things, and the top of the list was gratitude. And today, and it was from day one with Al-Anon, gratitude is the cornerstone of Al-Anon and recovery. And recovery, I do know, means getting something back I lost. And when I got home, and I thought about on that trip, the times that I planned his funeral. I heard people say that they had a dress hanging in the closet for every season. I had a red dress hanging in that closet. I was going to celebrate. Paid up the insurance. I deserved it. You know, I wanted that. And then I had another problem. How am I going to look sad in front of these two adult children? I was sad. I didn't have to fake it. And I can remember picking up the insurance check with much gratitude that I paid it, that I kept it paid up. And we started the journey that was there. It got really bad with Wayne, my son. I didn't see him for 4.5 years or speak with him. It became necessary. That's the only way I could do it. By his choice. Now, I would have done it a little bit differently, but that was his choice. And I was at a convention. I had not heard from him. He had, by that time, developed heart problems. And I was at a convention up in North Alabama. We're up in the hills of Alabama. And I called his daughter, my granddaughter was my number one. And came back to the room because it was a wall phone. We couldn't have phones. You know, one of those meditation, not meditation really, it was all Al-Anon, but she couldn't, no phones, no TVs, no anything, just wonderful place to go. And I was going to go call Julie that day to find out about her daddy because they was trying to decide whether to do heart surgery again or not. And I went back to the room to get a pen because I know I couldn't remember a number. She gave it to me, and he was out of CCU by that time, and they had done the catheterization and was going to do surgery, and it was going to be in Mobile, not Montgomery, and I was close to Montgomery and thought that I could flip back by that. But it didn't happen that way, and I had to make a decision. But it did call Wayne because Julie said, I have Daddy's number. He has the room now. He's out of CCU but waiting for the surgery on Monday. He answered the phone, and, of course, that no different than what I always have been. I said, this is your wonderful mother. And I said, how you doing? He says, Mom, I'm nearly dead. And I said, no, you're not. I said, you've got those two darling children. He has two grandchildren. And I said, you've got to stay around and see them get grown. And that put him out of it. Well, I didn't know if I was going to go on over to Mobile then, because I was spending the night in Birmingham. Didn't have a choice. It starts snowing. Another thing God took out of my hands. My granddaughter and I stayed on the phone all day, and he came out of it okay. But still, just an awful lot of heart problems. Talking about the love and hate, when my husband died, I was there that night and at the hospital, and he was on a cardiac ward, and I couldn't stay in there with him. But this is the miracles. When I started to leave, I knew he was different that day. And when I started to leave, I said, I love you. And he said, I love you too. And there wasn't a doubt that we both meant that. Working a program, he had almost 10 years sobriety when he died. And with the journey with Wayne, as I say, last year was a rough year. The heart got worse. But God gave me the greatest gift that's been given me in this program, and that was time. I would go to see him. He would get on a respirator a lot of times. I have been. And I have a memory here that I haven't even thought about for such a long time. Well, not since then, but I went up there, and he was on a respirator and couldn't speak and had not opened his eyes. And so I went in, and I had stayed 2 days, and I didn't want any regrets at all. I worked so hard. I worked this Al-Anon program so hard to not have regrets, and I don't have. And so I went in. I said, I'm going to go home. And I said, can I go in early? It wasn't busy in hours. And she said, yeah. And so I went and stood at the bed and talked to him. And no recognition at all. His eyes closed. And I turned, kissed him and turned around and got to the door. And the nurse says, wait a minute. He's opened his eyes. So I turned around and went back and reassured him that he was going to be okay. I didn't tell him I was going home. But he did get past that one. And then he would get back in the hospital. And I went to see him because he lived 200 miles away from me. And I won't ever forget that blessing and the years that has gone into making me what I am and making my life what I am and giving me the opportunities to undo some things that I'm not proud of. And we went riding that day. By this time, he was with hospice. And we went riding, and his mom, there's something I want to show you. And it was for flowers. I love flowers. And it was the prettiest place I believe I've ever seen. And he likes cactus, and I don't. So he wanted to ask the woman where the cactus was. He could walk a little bit, but not much. And she showed him and went over there, and, oh, he admired this one so much. And I said, do you like that one? And he said, yeah. And I said, I'll buy it for you. And he said, well, if I'm on a roll, I'll just go get the card or get them to bring me a card. I said, no one tell you exactly what I told you when you was little. You can have one thing. Now, if that's what you want, that's it. And we laughed about that. And so then he wanted to show me something else. By that time, he was tired. And it was blooming flowers, and there was a bench there with a shade over it. And he said, I could sit here forever, but you go ahead and walk around that. I did, and we went back and got us a cheeseburger, and I loved on his dog and stayed with him a little longer. And I knew when I drove away with such peace. And he told me probably a dozen times, Mom, I'm so glad you're here. And July 17th of last year, I got the call that no parent ever wants to get. I got it early in the morning that he had died. And I thought for a minute, I thought, okay, now, I was alone. And I said, what has Al-Anon taught me? And it's taught me, what would you be doing today if this had not happened? And I did it. I got up, made my coffee. I'm a little bit different than a lot of people, but the bumps of life has done this, and I've come out on top. Made coffee. That's what I do. And got my English muffin, ate that, sat down, read the paper. And then I got out my meditation book. That's what I always do. And it's unbelievable what happens on July the 17th. Few of us are entirely free from a sense of guilt. We may be remorseful because of our words or actions, or for things left undone. We may even feel guilty because of irrational or false accusation by the alcoholic. There was no room. I won't read the entirety, but I thought what an irony that is, that would be that day's reading. But it also in that reading tells me to examine it, to see where the guilt's coming from. I didn't have the closure with him that I did his daddy. He called me he liked to push my buttons. He never quite got over he couldn't call Mama. And he called me and wanted me to come up there 200 miles away. And I said, Wayne, you need to wake up your wife. I'm too far away right now. And so I got on the phone then later with them to see what it was. And I do. I have learned in Al-Anon that don't do anything that do what Al-Anon tells me to do, and I'll be okay. I didn't want him to push a button that I might resist and react to him that I would have that. I've been so grateful for that. I didn't call him back. He'd call later and says, Mama call. That's about all he would ever say. And I thought about it, and I thought, no, I can't go to bed like that. You know, if he does do that, or if I say something I'd be sorry of. And I didn't return the call, and I didn't have the opportunity. But I do know that that's the way that God intended it to be. And that it's okay. That I do know that without a shadow of a doubt. Richard, and I am watching my clock, so for you committee people, that I don't want you to get nervous. And I kind of like to do that, but I won't do it to them. They've been too nice to me. I know you do have. But with what Al-Anon has taught me, I know not to go there and look at the what ifs. So it told me what to do about the guilt, that I would, it was something that I was wanting to make it okay. But then I know it was best that I didn't talk to him. And with that, I just, you know, I went ahead and did my thing. I didn't call a soul, probably till noon that day. And I only went up there the night before. With the daughter, she was in Colorado. We've had our bumps. She was visiting her daughter in Colorado. And I will forget if I don't tell it right now. I wanted so bad. You know, we have these expectations. And I wanted so bad to go with my daughter to see her daughter. Well, it just didn't happen. Everything I tried, my daughter wouldn't pick up on it. I asked, and she still didn't do it. And so finally I came to Trent, and this sweet thing sitting out here today offered to go with me to Colorado. By that time, I had thought an awful lot about it. And I decided that that wasn't one of the things I wanted to do. I had self-esteem, and I wasn't going to beg anybody. You know, that's just the way it is. And, you know, I told you I'm a mean little kid. I had that name, too. And my daughter, I know, was feeling guilty. And she says, maybe this year we will do something. And I said, I'm sorry, Wanda. I'm booked up this year. I don't have time. And that's the way it is. I don't see her that much, but I don't have to try to go there. And there's what comes from, we created a monster because I chose not to tell her anything about her daddy. After when she was in Colorado, and she wanted me to tell her so bad, don't come back. But I told her, I said, this is one decision you're going to make. I'm not going to do it for you. And her son, my grandson, got a hold of her. And she did fly back. But she and I left the church at the same time. She left going back to Colorado, flew back out there, and I came home. And put my, I'm so at peace. And I read something recently that said, look for your talents. And I thought, wait a minute, I don't have an oil painting hanging on the wall, and I don't have this. I'm good with an axe out in the yard. But I thought of a talent that I have, and that's memory. I have a gift of a memory. And Al-Anon tells me not to use that memory to dredge up old things that happen. Use it in a productive way. I thought about this mother that I had not had a good relationship with. And when I was going to talk recently, that came up. And that, what came out of that was, my mother was a Southern lady. And she taught three daughters to be Southern ladies. And for that, I will ever be grateful. The other talent of that, using that memory, is this boy that you, I don't know, he's coming out a lot today, but I have a lot of gratitude about him. The peace I have about him is, that was the roughest ride. That was the sweetest ride any mother has ever had as to have this boy, her firstborn. And I had the opportunity to tell him this, and it's so important that I share this, that this is what's come out of my Al-Anon program. On Mother's Day, I wasn't going to be home, so I told him, I said, I'll call you. And I was, he loves the country, and I was at a friend's house, and the pecan trees and the new growth was out, and I went outside to call him. And I told him, I said, it's been such an honor to have had you as my firstborn. And he teared up, and he says, Mama, there's something I want to tell you. And I always wondered if he knew I loved him, because I did have to detach from him. And he says, Mama, there's never been a time that I doubted your love for me. And for a program that would put that in my life, there's just not room for anything else. I run the roads a lot. Don't plan on stopping. I've learned so much. Now this is going to be funny to a lot of you. The biggest thing I learned out of this trip is I do know that I don't do much preparation, because I have to let God have this one. I will sit down and say, oh, I wish I'd have said this, but I say exactly what God intends me to say. But when I get a little bit tense, I'm going to do a talk. I'll first start with a rake outside. And then I might go to something else. And then I might have the axe out there next. There again is that boy. When I sold the house after my husband died and downsized, I gave him the tools, all of his tools, his daddy's tools, and the axe. And I said, now, Wayne, if I buy another house, I want my axe back. And he batted those pretty blue eyes. And he said, Mama, you have used your last axe. Well, I knew he wasn't going to do it. I didn't expect him to. I'd lose the pleasure of doing it myself. But every time I got that axe out, I thought of that. Well, I've started getting allergies. And last couple of years ago, Kathy was following me off over to do a talk. Woke up that morning with allergy and laryngitis. And I'd been outside doing my usual thing and got the allergy. And Kathy laughed, because as long as she's known me, she's wanted me speechless. And she had that silly grin on her face, you know, like I finally arrived. I said, I could whisper a little bit, and I said, don't laugh. If I can't, you're going to. And her expression changed altogether. Well, with this one, I want you to know you can fly to California without getting outside with the axe, because I wasn't about to take a chance on not getting to do this. And I said, there's so much I've learned from every experience I have. And I was wondering what I was going to do about my hair. You know, us Al-Anons just got to plan everything. And y'all have kept us busy. It's been wonderful. And I thought, wait a minute. What am I going to do about the hair? And so Kathy wants to run this morning, or whatever it is people do that get up at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And so she played with the clock last night. Didn't have to be up till 6. But it went off at 5. Well, she's bounced up. Now, you know how these people are. It's got that kind of energy. Well, I'm wide awake by that time. Well, I want you to know the hair got done. So, you know, God takes care of you if you'll just let him. And the last thing I'm going to say is the blessings. I have two 10 and 11-year-old great-grandchildren. And my grandson, I only have one, had twin girls 3 years ago. They just had a birthday. And those twin girls are getting twin brothers. And that is the funniest thing. Boys, I love. I just love boys. So I can hardly wait. But I kept saying to God, I wonder what it's going to look like. You know, those two little girls, now these two little boys, walked out of a restaurant right here. And there's this woman with the stroller with these two darling, identical twins. The boys are going to be identical. And they just made my day. But I kept wondering what they would look like as a family. And so I'm waiting down there with Judy, was going to meet me to have breakfast. And this family came by, and I said, wait a minute, there's two of them. And it was the funniest thing, and I never have been one to just sit back and be timid about anything. And so I just got up and I said, I just have to ask you something. Those are twins, aren't they? He said, yeah. I said, and those are twins too. Yeah. I got to see what my little boys and my little girls are going to look like together. These are some of the blessings that I didn't know how to look for, that I absolutely didn't know how to look for. And I think of Peggy when we sat, and I don't even remember what she's talking about, that I was nice to her, but I did enjoy spending time with her. But it's the blessings that we get out of this. And that many years ago when I started, if anybody had ever told me the way I felt in my life, that my whole Norman Rockwell family just didn't happen, and I'm afraid it's not going to. But I can enjoy what I've got and enjoy every minute of more than I ever would have before. But these are the things. I just have to be willing. And somebody said they get worried about Al-Anon, and I do too. You know, those of us that came in 100 years ago, but. Somebody said to me one time, we was talking about it, and what can we do? What can we do? And an alcoholic said this to me. Show up, look as nice as you can. You're only one person, but you can be a real good person for the program. And with this age, and in case you haven't jotted it down how much it is, I was 84 years old in January. Wow. The 80s have been the best years of my life. They have been the best. I'm in real good health. I'm not on medication. Loved Al-Anon to the core. There's just not enough words for me to tell you what this program that it took a family that was so devastated, and put them back to some kind that we can live with. And I get in that somebody said something about the little old ladies, and that I heard a speaker that I was speaking with not too long ago that made my day. She talked about how she was AA, and she talked about going to these Al-Anon meetings, and everybody's matched up. Of course, everything I have has got to be matched. And it was the funniest thing to me. I couldn't wait to tell her when show her my shoes that matched my skirt that night when I talked, you know, and all that sort of stuff. So these are the things that take me where I need to go. And I get more invitations to AA things than I do Al-Anon. And I keep saying, okay, God, what is it I've missed? I thought I got it all. And I have the privilege of going in August to speak at the Southeast Regional Seminar, AA Seminar in Biloxi, no doubt. And that's where it ended. That's where we were stationed there. And I think about what a difference. How it just can't get any better. Not that this is not my favorite thing to do, but I have to put myself out here if you're going to understand what this program has done for me. Because if I'm going to sit at home in a recliner that I don't own, you're not going to know how my program works. And if I've said nothing else, but if you can't believe anything, if you're at a point, I didn't come up here to, just don't think of me as an old lady that ought to still stay at home, but just believe that I believe that this program works because I'm living proof. When you can live through the illness and the death of a son, and that's why God, a child, that's why God allowed this for me now, is to see, just test me and just see, okay, what kind of program do you really have? And I want you to know it's wonderful. And please, as you hear so many times, don't leave until you find your miracle because it's there. Thank you so much.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.